Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average up 84 at 21,637. Well, you knew it after I said the Dow was up. Third straight session in which the Dow Industrial Average has closed at a record high. Today, 21,637. And whenever the Dow Jones hits a record high, we have a celebration at the Money Radio Megaplex. The Money Radio Symphonic Orchestra plays the celebratory theme. Money Radio staff gathers in the control room. Today we've got, we've got a lot of people gathering in there. Renee, Doreen, Josh, Drew joins us. Glad to see you got a haircut, Drew. Trimmed the beard and everything. Yeah, natty. Where's the sales staff? Oh, it's Friday. Of course it's Friday, yeah. Well, that was foolish of me to think they'd still be around on a Friday afternoon. We have some folks joining us from our sister station, 1580 AM, The Fanatic. Crespin's there. Crespin is everywhere. He is ubiquitous. And let's see, we have James and Drew. And, RC, hobbling in on a cane, along with Wendy. Good to see you. Carson, thank you for joining us today. So I can see everybody there in the control room lighting the candles right now. Lavender candles. They're lighting up the candles, and I can see them. There is a glass partition between the talk studio and the control room. And yes, the assemblage looks like the casting call for the Grapes of Wrath. Why, there's Uncle John, Jim Casey, and Muley Graves. And oh my, it's the ghost of Tom Joad. Well, if your candles are lit, who is leading the procession today? Wendy. Wendy, you have the honors. Very good. If you will begin the procession. And there they go. Down the hallway, headed for the Money Radio Bistro to enjoy milk and cookies. Today's milk and cookies, several packs of chocolate chip cookies and chocolate milk, just to ensure a high-quality sugar buzz. They come compliments of Mr. Walter Carver, a highly regarded prize-winning author who stopped by the Megaplex shortly after the closing bell. We thank you so much, Mr. Carver, for your generosity and friendship. Dow Industrials, up 84, a record 21,637, and we celebrate with milk and cookies. S&P 500 up 11 at 2,459, a record close for the S&P. NASDAQ Composite up 38 at 6,312. That is not a record. Russell 2000, small and mid-caps, up 3 at 1,428, and that's a record there. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down 3 basis points at 2.32%. Oil up 52 cents at $46.60 per barrel. Gold up $11.10 at $12.29.40 an ounce. Well, Washington is in gridlock. White House faces scrutiny. Valuations are at the highest levels since the financial crisis. There's been straight months of outflows from the biggest exchange-traded fund tracking the S&P 500. So what happened today? Record highs for the Dow, S&P, and Russell 2000. NASDAQ within 10 points of a record. The CBOE Volatility Index, the VIX, ended at 9.51. That's a 24-year low, falling 15%. Complacency abounds. We start with economic data. Commerce Department said retail sales fell 0.2% in June. Americans curtailed spending at restaurants, department stores, and gasoline stations. That followed a 0.1% drop in May. Most retail segments posted weaker results in June. Sales at gas stations posted the biggest drop, down 1.3%, reflecting lower prices at the pump. That's actually a good thing. Sales also fell at grocers, restaurants, bookstores, sporting goods stores, department stores. Auto dealers reported a small increase in sales, but they're really not moving new cars off the lots as quickly as they were a year ago. Meanwhile, Labor Department said consumer prices were flat in June, latest evidence that inflation remains muted. All told, inflation has climbed just 1.6% from a year ago. In June, energy prices were down 1.6%. We paid less for gasoline, natural gas, and electricity. Cost of food leveled off in June after five straight increases. The core rate of inflation, excluding the volatile food and energy categories for people who don't eat or consume energy, up 0.1% in June. Grocery prices have actually declined in the past year, but the cost of takeout and eating out, that's up sharply. Over the past 12 months, the core CPI up 1.7%. That's unchanged from the prior month. The University of Michigan's sentiment index slipped to 93.1 in July from 95.1 in June. The index has fallen from a 13-year high of 98.5 in January. Americans feel plenty confident about the economy right now, but seem convinced that we're all headed for hell in a handbasket. An index that measures current conditions rose to 113.2, setting a 10-year high. But a gauge that looks out 6 months fell to 80.2 from 83.9. The outlook of consumers now back to where it was before the November election. Industrial production rose 0.4% in June, a touch ahead of expectations, and the fifth straight monthly increase. Mining output surged 1.6%. Mining includes the oil and gas sector. Federal Reserve reported utilities output as flat. Manufacturing output edged up 0.2%. Economic forecasts are revising estimates for second quarter GDP lower to the range of 1.9 to 2.5%. At the start of the second quarter, estimates topped 3% growth. The economic data confirms a lack of inflation and a sluggish economy that fits with dovish statements from Federal Reserve policymakers this week. At this rate, we may have seen the last rate hike from the Fed for this year. Fed still wants to trim its balance sheet, but 1.6% inflation, weak retail sales, hardly justification to hike rates. The dollar dropped lower, treasuries rallied, oil gained 1% today, 5% for the week. Earnings season kicked off in earnest with J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo all posting better-than-expected profits. Even though the bottom line was solid, they still faced some challenges. J.P. Morgan Chase reported a better-than-expected quarterly profit due to strong loan growth and higher interest rates, but said net interest income for the year would be lower than expected, sending its shares down about 2%. J.P. Morgan earned $26.5 billion in profit over the past 12 months. That's the most ever by any major U.S. bank. While trading results were worse than analysts estimated, second quarter earnings set a record. The bank said that net interest income will probably climb $4 billion this year, less than the $4.5 billion previously projected. Now, one area of weakness is mortgages. Where the market may shrink, competition is also stiff there. J.P. Morgan said its markets revenue fell 14% in the second quarter. At Citigroup, trading revenue was down 7.2%. On a conference call, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon had a few choice words about Washington politics, choice as in four-letter words we can't repeat on air. Dimon also had trepidation about the Fed's plans to unwind its balance sheet, saying, "We've never had QE like this before, and we've never had unwinding like this before." Obviously, that should say something to you about the risk that might mean, because we've never lived with it before. Well, the Fed is likely going to announce the kickoff this year, possibly at the September meeting. The Fed's plans call for a phase-in period. It'll unload $10 billion in the first month, raise that to $50 billion over the next 12 months, then it will continue at that pace to achieve its balance sheet normalization. Just like the Fed created this money during QE to buy these assets, it will destroy this money at a rate of $50 billion a month or $600 billion a year. It's the reverse of QE with probably reverse effects. QE had the intended effect, inflating asset prices. Unwinding QE, once it starts in earnest, is likely to pull asset prices in the opposite direction. But given how leveraged assets are, and to the enormous extent they've been used as collateral, Diamond, the banker who is concerned about collateral values, hit the nail on the head. He said, "It'll be a very different world." Citigroup posted earnings per share of $1.28 on revenue of $17.9 billion. They topped expectations on the top and bottom lines as compared to earnings of $1.24 per share and $17.5 billion in revenue in the year-ago period. Wells Fargo beat earnings expectations. It benefited from higher interest rates, though revenue was lower than expected at $22.1 billion. At Wells Fargo, new car loans dropped by almost half in the second quarter, while its automotive portfolio fell to the lowest level in 2 years after the bank tightened underwriting standards. Another cause for celebration earlier this week, court approval of a $142 million settlement of a class action lawsuit between the bank and victims of its fake account scandal of 2016. The fiasco, as I'm sure you remember, included claims that Wells Fargo employees opened up to 2 million bank and credit card accounts without customers' permission in order to boost sales numbers. Multiple class action suits followed. The bank expects them to all fold into this settlement. However, the bank's first response was to veto the class action, send it to mandatory arbitration, an alternate form of resolving a dispute using an appointed independent party instead of the court system. It's an option banks and financial institutions have written into contracts with consumers. They use it to prevent consumers from joining together to pursue relief. Only after public pressure did Wells Fargo agree to face the suit. Well, the big three banks all beat on the bottom line. There was a bit of disappointment on the guidance, but overall, it's been a pretty good start to the earnings season, good enough to result in record highs for the Dow Jones Industrial Average, up 84 to close at 21,637. S&P 500 up 11 at a record 2459, NASDAQ up 38 at 6,312. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio, and the daily blog, eatthebankers.com.